Well, good afternoon, folks. Welcome to MP3 panel here on the EFF forum. My name is Laughing Boy. I'm affiliated with the SC 2600 chapter, Southeast chapter of 2600 magazine. I'm a computer enthusiast. I'm also a musician. Big fan of MP3 ever since I first discovered it maybe 5 years ago. And being a struggling artist myself, I see the many benefits to it as a format in terms of getting my music out there. MP3.com has a really sweet deal going if you're an independent artist. Basically, you register on their website, and once you've done so, you can upload your music to your own MP3.com. Ah, he's got an actual MP3.com CD. Not only that, you can upload music there where people can download it, and or they can either stream it or play it, download it or stream it right off the web at reduced quality or higher bit rate. And they will also produce CDs for you on demand and pay you the royalties. It's a pretty sweet deal that they've got going, and some of the artists on MP3.com are like earning like tens of thousands of dollars, just from people downloading their music off of the web, because they have a system called Payback for Playback, whereby they pay you royalties for the number of downloads and plays of your music, and I just signed up with them. I think about 6 weeks ago, and I've already earned a whopping 77 cents. Actually, I think it was 88 cents as of yesterday. So I'm very close here to retiring and buying a small island in the Florida Keys and becoming a modern-day mad scientist, Lex Luthor type thing, where I can make my music and disseminate my idea for global domination upon an unsuspecting public. But it's a pretty sweet deal. And one of the nice things about the deal with MP3.com is that it is a non-exclusive contract. You are not locked in to keeping your music on their website. In other words, if you were to get your big break as an artist and get signed by a major label, you can terminate the contract at any time. And with them, and no questions asked. It's also kind of sweet because instead of, having to knock on the door of every record label, even indie record labels, get an amazing number of demo tapes every day sent to them from other bands. Nobody at MP3.com cares what you're putting up there. You can even put offensive stuff. They you have to flag it as being parental. Parental warning if there's vulgar language in it or objectionable lyrics. But basically you just sign up, you create this web page, it takes about 2 or 3 minutes, and then you start uploading your music. Now to be eligible for royalties from them, you have to be part of their premium member services, I think it is. And that's, I think that costs $20 per month. So as of right now, only having earned like 88 cents in royalties, it really doesn't pay for me to be a member of their premium artist service until I've started generating some more interest. But it's kind of cool. I've actually gotten a few emails from MP3 fans, people telling me, encouraging words, saying I like what you're doing, keep up the work. And by the way, if anybody wants to go and sample some of my work, it's mp3.com/laughing_boy is where my webpage is. It's kind of rough right now. I really haven't done much in the way of HTML, sweetening it up or making it look nice and pretty. So it's still a work in progress. But so there's the shameless plug for myself. And in the, of course, no MP3 discussion would be complete without talking about Napster. It's really, really kind of sad, I think, the way the music industry just tore Napster to to shreds even after they wanted to go to a legitimate service. The record labels were hard-headed and have decided that they're going to launch their own systems for distributing music over the internet, which I think is a huge mistake because Napster is, number one, it's a household name. And, you know, if, unless you've been living under a rock for the last 5 years, everybody knows what Napster is, even my parents who don't even touch computers or the internet. It's an established name, number one. Number two, the infrastructure is already there, and it's working quite well. The only thing the record labels had to do was cash their checks every month. You know, the system was in place and working quite well, and you know, now there's going to be several different competing services. You're going to have BMG on one side, their artists from one site, and then who are some of the other big players? Sony Music is going to set up their own branch, Sony and all of their subsidiaries, and then you'll have, what's another one, EMI. There's like three or four major conglomerate record labels, Time Warner, you know, Virgin. There's going to be all these different groups, whereas, you know, if they all pooled together and went to one site, there would be a one-stop shop where you could go and download this music. I've always contended that if Napster went legitimate, I would pay $5-$10 a month to have all the music I wanted. But I'm not going to pay $5 or $10 a month to one site and another $5 or $10 to another site. You know, I want to go to one place and be able to get all of the music in the world that was ever recorded. You know, there. These secured formats that they're boasting. By the way, these sites that the record labels are working on, they're getting away from the MP3 compression because it's an unsecure format. They want something that's a secure format, and they're going to limit the number of copies allegedly that you can download or make of a file, which is completely ludicrous. I mean, somebody is going to crack that and figure out a way around it. So they're just making things, I think, more complicated than it needs to be. It's really, really strange, I think, that nobody in the record industry seems to have a clue, an ounce of common sense in approaching this technology. They're also, you know, approaching this with such caution after, I mean, you know, their argument was all along, these people are downloading this music for free. They're passing it around for free. We're not getting any royalties from it. And I've actually seen the RIAA's sales figures. Up until this year, sales figures actually declined a little bit. And I do not attribute that to Napster. I attribute it to, you know, sales for everything are declining. New homes, new cars, the economy is going south. And, you know, music recreation is no exception to that. But it was really interesting. Ever since the inception of Napster, the annual record sales were continuing to increase by, like, you know, $2 or $3 billion per year. I wish I actually had the link with the RIAA's sales figures on it. In fact, Hillary Rosen, who's been one of the staunchest opponents to MP3 compression, herself said in the RIAA's annual report last year, they said something along the lines of, while there seems to be a great deal of excitement for the new technologies emerging, in other words, internet, she said, loyalty to the physical product seems to be as strong as ever and doesn't show any signs of weakening. So they're you know, talking out both sides of their mouth. On one side, they say their sales are being hurt. On the other side, they're saying that sales are going up. You know, which is it? You can't have both. Question back there? Audio Galaxy. I haven't really had a chance to look into that too much. I have heard of it. Can you elaborate a little bit on it?
So far as I've been able to experience with it, it's been basically It's Napster. The only difference I've noticed, the only big difference, is that it has ads that pop up every once in a while.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not entirely sure what their structure is or what. Okay. I just sort of wanted to know.
Yeah. Another comment over there?
Yeah. Basically, what they do is you have this little download utility just like Napster does, but it's a satellite. They call it like a satellite.
That's right.
And
I've heard about
it
that.
Just, yeah. It searches just like Napster, but it puts everything inside of a queue. And if someone comes online available and you happen to be online at the time, then it just automatically starts to download for you.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And
so in other words,
in some respects, it beats Napster. You can find
interesting.
I mean, it has most of the features. It's just its organization for music is a little different.
Uh huh.
But
it pretty
there's
much
that
the
and there's Kazaa.
Right.
That a lot of people recommended, but
uh-huh.
And Kazaa has a much more Napster-like interface.
It's interesting to note, by the way, Napster still works. You need to download a little utility called Napigator. Basically, Napster, there are other servers besides the servers that are owned by Napster. There are what they call independent open NAP servers. And they use the same technology, the same protocols as the Napster client, except they're independently owned or operated servers outside of Napster. So basically, you download Napigator and just go to Napigator.com. It's a free download. Again, they have pop-up banners that come when you run it, and you know that's inevitable. I knew that was going to start happening sooner or later. I think it's fair. I mean, these companies are exchanging quite a bit of bandwidth to run these servers, even though they're actually not hosting files. Just the sheer volume of queries that are hitting their servers is going to drink up a lot of bandwidth. And they've got to pay for that bandwidth some way. Basically, you download the free Napigator utility and you run it. It piggybacks in conjunction with Napster. While Napigator is running, it'll display a list of all of the open NAP servers, and you click on the one that you wish to connect to. Now, some of them are, the ping times really aren't a good barometer of the reliability of these servers. Sometimes you'll see a server that says, 50 milliseconds ping time, and your search queries take forever, or you can't even connect to the server. So you really have to kind of keep going down the list until you find a decent server that you can connect to. But on average, you'll go to one of these servers and they'll be sharing 1.2 million songs, just like Napster, just like the good old days. It's like it never went away, and for all practical purposes, it never did. It's kind of funny, though, because the Napster client will launch and it'll tell you downloads have been disabled, and it's like, oh, yeah, well, what's this over here in my download queue that's 98% finished? But, you can't connect. The downloads are disabled only on Napster servers. Now, most of these servers are being run overseas. There's several of them being run in Italy, where the RIAA doesn't have an in with the local government or the national government yet. And then, of course, you've got the utilities as well, like BearShare, LimeWire, where there is no central server for anybody to shut down. And that's a great idea. It really is kind of cool to have something that really can't be ever shut down. But it is a really, really, those clients are real bandwidth hogs, because while you're being a client, you're also being a server, and you're answering the queries that these other users are making as well. When you join the Nutella or the BearShare network, you're both a server and a client, and that does soak up quite a bit of bandwidth sometimes. So unless you're on a DSL cable modem or a T1 or better, it's probably not viable for a dial-up account. If you're also looking for MP3 files or any type of other files that you can imagine, I always say that Usenet is probably the best-kept secret on the Internet. Does everybody here, I assume, knows what Usenet is? Does anybody not know what Usenet is, news groups? The alt binaries, sounds, MP3, and all of its brethren in that that hierarchy. I mean, it amazes me. I use a Usenet service called, it's not SuperNews. It's actually called usenetserver.com. And they've actually got a point of presence. One of their servers is right here in Atlanta, which is very nice. Then they've got another one, I think, in Chicago, and one in Los Angeles, I think, West Coast server. These servers are pretty quick, and they seem to retain messages in the alt binaries hierarchy for a decent amount of time. Usually it's about a week. So you'll go into alt binary sounds MP3, and you know there will be 7,000 songs in there, you know, basically just waiting for you to download. And again, Usenet is the distributed architecture. Nobody can ever shut it down because there's no one server. These servers are all mirroring what other servers are sharing. So if you're looking for MP3 files or any other types of files, you know, and you're sick of going searching, combing the web, and going to these sites where a pop-up banner clicks, you close the pop-up banner, and another 12 banners pop up, just drives me nuts. And I've noticed turning off JavaScript does not always work. and sometimes you really need JavaScript on some of these sites. That's deliberate, of course. But I got sick of combing the web for MP3 files years ago, and Usenet and Nutella and Napster have more than fit the bill for me. Let's see, what else to talk about? Probably not saying anything new that nobody's said before. Of course, the other guy that was supposed to sit on the panel here who was running it didn't show up, so I'm just sort of winging it today for those of you who walked in here. Guess any comments or questions from anybody out there? Yeah.
How would you, as a musician, how would you quantify the bit rates and the quality compared to a CD?
You know, I have very sensitive ears, and if an MP3 is ripped and encoded at 128 bits using high quality mode, which is, it takes longer because there's a longer processing time. I use a utility called Audio Grabber when I'm ripping tracks. Audio Grabber, and then I'm using the Fraunhofer. Actually, no, I'm using the Radium MP3 codecs now.
Never heard of it.
Radium. Gosh, I wish I had the link where to get them. It's a superior codec to the Fraunhofer. It yields a smaller file size and better sound quality. I have a really, really tough time distinguishing. For certain types of music, if you're talking about like dance music, you know, where there's just, you know, a steady repetitive sound going over and over and over again, I have a real tough time hearing a difference between a track that was ripped and encoded at 128K versus something that was encoded at 320. That's not true for all styles of music. If you have a lot of strings and instruments that have really, really high-pitched tones, then you can hear some of the limitations of 128. But 128, really, most people aren't going to be able to pick out those unless they're listening for it. And that's why I think most encoders use 128 as their default encoding bit rate, because most people won't be able to notice the difference. If I am concerned about the sound quality and I want to go a little bit better, I'll generally bump it up to 160. And beyond that, I really think you have to have really decent audio equipment to start to detect the differences. And then there again, it's only if you're listening for it. Most people don't care. I mean, I'm a DJ as well. I worked in this bar where one channel on the amplifier was blown for months, and I couldn't get my boss to replace it. So we're blasting this music in glorious mono, and it wasn't even, you know, true mono with both channels combined. They were just listening to the right channel, and Nobody cared. Nobody cared that it was just this one speaker working. Everybody had a good time. That's the thing right there I think a lot of musicians lose sight of, is that, you know, the core of your audience isn't other musicians or other DJs. They're not, people aren't listening, oh my gosh, he's encoding at 128K. This sounds like crap. No, only another DJ or musician would be listening for that. You know, once you go below 128, then you're you know, if you're talking about ripping a CD, you're definitely going to hear limitations and artifacts, and you know, your sound quality is going to be able to, it is going to suffer quite a bit. I can detect stuff. I can tell the difference between 128K and I think the next one down is 112. Or 96, you know, once you get to that point, then it becomes pretty obvious. The fidelity starts to go downhill from there. But it, again, you know, it depends on what you're encoding. If you're encoding a telephone conversation, you know, doing anything beyond 8K per second, you know, 8 kilohertz, you know, is really overkill because of the sound limitations of the phone equipment in the first place. I think you were putting your hand up earlier.
Oh, it's just this was just a comment in regards to what he was doing. I was looking at the same problem and trying to reduce the file size, and about 80K is where it's really,
yeah,
really, really noticeable. And yeah, you go anything below that, and it's going to sound
like AM radio.
Yeah, to even the casual listener. But
yeah,
but like he was saying, it's most people, they're not going to notice a difference. And the,
yeah,
128K is perfectly fine and yields smaller file sizes,
right,
which is kind of what it's all about anyway.
Right. I mean, I go on to Napster and these other places, and I see these files ripped at 360, and I just pass them up. And
sure, they're too big.
I usually try to download everything at 128 is the bit rate that I look for. And in fact, to conserve disk space, I got this utility that will do a batch downsampling of all of your MP3 files. In other words, you can tell it to scan your hard disks for all the MP3 files, and anything that isn't this target bit rate that you want, say, you know, anything that's 100, you know, over 128K, it'll actually downsample to 128K. And, you know, I did that to conserve some disk space and kind of, you know, just keep everything uniform across the board.
Along the same lines, too, talking about mp3.com, if you create your MP3 file from whatever program you're using, and it gives you a choice of higher bit rates, of course, the quality is a little bit better, but mp3.com will not accept anything other than 128K.
Thank you for mentioning that. I was going to bring that up. Yes, you have to rip at 128K for mp3.com to accept your files. And actually, they take your files. They actually burn the CDs from the MP3s you upload, right? Can I see that, by the way? I want to see an example of their handiwork. This is pretty cool. You know, again, you can sign up with mp3.com, and they will produce CDs, sell them on their website for you. I think the cost is the cost to make them is like $5. Is it $7? And how much of that do you get? Or
the way that it works is that you have to charge at least $7.
Okay.
You get half of that. So they're recouping their cost for the actual burning of the media, the printing directly on the CD, the full color artwork. So they're going to recuperate their cost, but you can charge anything you want up to, I think, $16.
Right.
And what's very appealing about it to me is that I don't have to deal with distribution problems.
Right.
Now, this is the same deal as if I had signed a record deal. You know, you're going to give away a large chunk of the cash. However, unlike a record deal, I still own that.
Yeah.
When the day is done. And
yeah, when the game is over.
When the game is over, that's still mine. On a record,
yeah,
label, you don't own it anymore.
You don't own it.
Period.
You don't own it.
You sign away.
Yeah.
You sign it away, and it's not yours.
Yeah,
anymore.
That's
so
another
I
thing.
I really like that deal.
Yeah, that's another thing about the record companies. They've really gotten to be rather sleazy. First off, they've always been rather sleazy. dishonest business by its very nature. If you look at some of the history of it, you know, the paying off DJs, payola to play certain records as opposed to other ones. It's almost like organized crime, and I'm sure the mafia, the mob has its hand in there someplace. But we won't go into that. They are basically there was I think it was it something added on to the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. There was some legislation that was passed. Basically, a record label treats a CD as a work for hire,
which means you don't own
you
the
do
rights.
Not own it. It used to be that you held onto the rights to the recording, that they, I believe, they got to distribute it for X number of years. But after the contract had expired, they could either renew it or you could take the recording and shop it to another record label. That's why you'll see some older recordings that came out on, you know, major labels, and then they're re-released years later. You know, Rykodisc, David Bowie,
right.
he acquired his entire catalog from RCA and was able to re-release it on the indie label Rykodisc. Or Rykodisc, depends on how do you pronounce that? Ryko?
I'm not sure. Yeah. Courtney Love had to do the same thing.
Yeah.
She had to pay six figures to regain the rights to her own music.
It's just ridiculous.
It was insane.
It's so funny. I don't think it's funny, actually, but Paul McCartney and John Lennon, of course, this is the story everybody's heard about. The Beatles, you know, selling basically as they were existed as the Beatles, wrote all of their songs and were, you know, basically selling them to, I can't even think of his name, the guy who started Northern Songs. You know, basically they back in the 60s, you know, he's giving us a couple $1,000s for the, you know, for each of these, or, you know, several $1,000s for each of these songs, and they laughed. They thought, oh God, you know, it's not costing us anything to write these songs. And little did they know, they didn't own the publishing rights to these songs. They were being sold, they were selling the rights away to these songs. And back in the 80s, of course, Michael Jackson acquired the Northern Songs catalog, and Paul McCartney had said that he approached the guy. He said, if you're ever looking to sell the catalog, you know, let me know. I've got a little bit of money. And it turned out that the catalog went up for sale in the mid-80s. And he said, okay, $20 million. And Paul McCartney went, great. You know, here I wrote these songs for nothing, you know, 20 years ago, and it's going to cost me $20 million to get the rights back to my work. And there was a little bit of bickering between he and Yoko Ono. He was going to go in halves with her on it. And meanwhile, Michael Jackson came back and said, I'll buy him for $40 million. And he said, sold. And that's, to make a long story short, it's unfortunate, but you know, the music industry really does take advantage of the artists, and MP3.com, to this day, they have the most benign, artist-friendly system that's working out there, and you retain the rights to all of your work. They'll print CDs for you. They'll handle the distribution. You don't have to go and knock on their door and get on your knees and beg. And like I said, there are artists out there that are earning tens of thousands of dollars in royalties from the plays that they get on this. MP3.com actually has a chart, a popularity chart, and it's very difficult to get on the charts. But I've been told once you get into the top 10, you can basically be assured of getting about 2,000 to 3,000 downloads per day of a song once you get on the charts. So there are a lot of artists out there right now that you know, they're getting their music out there to a global audience, and you know, it's just a, it's a sweet deal. I think it's, you know, the wave of the future, and the record industry is scared because their little racket that they've been running for the last 50 years is starting to finally be unraveled as they watch, and they're scared.
That brings up the issue of copywriting. How do you have to copyright every song before you send it to MP3? I mean, would you suggest that?
I mean,
it's automatically copyrighted,
right,
really.
Right, yeah, that's the thing. Recent revisions of the copyright laws, once something takes on a tangible form, that is, you write it down, you record it, you put it into a physical existence, once a work actually physically exists in one medium or another, it is automatically copyright. And you don't need to register it with the U.S. Copyright Office. Some people recommend that you do. However, I would think really the only thing the registering the copyright does is the U.S. Copyright Office will send back a letter when your copyright has been filed, and they put a date stamp on it. And if you were going to challenge somebody in court over copyright infringement, it's that date that they're going to be looking at. You do not need to register a copyright. Works are automatically copywritten when you actually create the work. It's just registering it so that you have a concise, you know, government stamp. You know, this was the date came into our office and was registered. However, I would think just the mere act of uploading your songs to mp3.com, of course, they've got server logs. They know when this song was first uploaded, and you could use that in a court case to go back and say, okay, this was the I wrote this song, I uploaded it at such and such a date. And that's probably, in some ways, even better, because the U.S. Copyright Office, I mean, you know, very slow. You're best to send something out to them and get return receipt, you know, so that'll give you the date. I mean, it can take months, literally, before you actually receive word that your copyright's been filed.
Have you ever done the certified mail thing where you send
yourself? Oh, send it to yourself?
I mean, somebody said that doesn't work anymore. The lawyers tear you apart.
Well, they could, because first off, it's not impossible to open a, you know, an envelope. If you were to, and think about this, you know, if you wrote a piece of poetry and you put it in an envelope, all you would have to do, you could tuck the flap, you could just send an empty envelope back to yourself. You could tuck the flap inside the envelope, get the stamp on there, get this thing mailed back to you, and then you just put the copy of that in there whenever you want and seal the envelope up. You know, that is no proof, no actual proof of the date of something. If you were going to do something like that, if we're talking about a printed material, like a poem or a photograph or something, take it to a notary public. Get a notary public stamp on it. Now, I do want to note that I am not a lawyer, okay? So don't take... please don't take my legal advice here, and you are a lawyer, or...
I'm sorry. This is an exceptional book that I've just jumped into, called "Protecting Your Assets," "Protecting Your Ideas,"
cover
it's
your
written
assets.
By an intellectual property attorney that specializes in copyrights and patents and the whole nine yards. And there's just a wealth of stuff in here.
Right.
Some of it's almost a little bit too complex for me, but
yeah,
this is a very good source.
Yeah, I think somebody else like back. You had a comment back there. Certified mail thing? Okay. Yeah. Like I said, he said, you know, if I were a lawyer, I would tear that apart. I would say, okay, so you've got an envelope that you mailed back to you, and it has a postmark on it dated something. Okay. Can you prove to me that poem or that work was actually in that envelope when you mailed it, and that you didn't, you know, send an empty envelope to yourself 5 years ago you know, and stuff it in there at that time. So, you know, that's there's no proof, really. Like I said, I would think the notary public stamp actually on a printed material would be more would hold up better in the court of law. Again, I'm not a lawyer, so don't take this as legal advice, but you know, for what it's worth, again, uploading stuff to mp3.com, they've got server logs. They're going to know the date that this file was first posted to their servers, and I would think that, you know, you could pull those server logs if there was ever a court case where you were challenging something. And the great thing about that is, you know, you can hit stop on your recording utility, have your MP3 file done. You could have it uploaded, like, literally just, you know,
within minutes.
after it's first been created. So it's very, very quick in that respect.
And they do also send you an email confirming
yes.
that the song was uploaded
right.
and pending approval. And then I think they send you another one.
Right, when it is approved.
When it is finally approved
yeah.
for the
yeah,
category you're putting it in.
Yeah. It takes them, generally, you upload a song and it's not immediately visible to the rest of the world. It takes them, generally, if you're not part of the premium member services, I think it generally takes them about a week or so
yeah,
to approve your
right.
song. And but basically, I think the reason they do that is they have a human actually sample it. I think they want to make sure you're not, you know, screaming out a bunch of racist stuff or, you know, although I don't know. I do know it's they do have a policy you cannot upload cover songs unless you have you've
probably
gone through the licensing
the
mechanical rights to it, which is another whole ball of wax there. The laws have changed there a little bit too, and Harry Fox Agency is one of the groups that handles a lot of the publishing rights for a lot of major recordings. And it used to be, I think you could pay on a per copy. You know, they audited you like every 6 months or whatever, and you said, I sold this many records in that time. And they said, okay, for each of those records, you owe us da-da-da-da-da this amount. Now, I believe the last time I checked, they want you to purchase like it in blocks, like I think for 10,000 copies minimum or something like that. And, you know, it costs, I think it's like $500 or something like that. The laws have changed. I'd have to go back and look at it again, but it's not it's not as inexpensive as it once used to be. I mean, we had I was in a band years ago, and we covered the Time Warp from the Rocky Horror Picture Show and actually got the mechanical licensing for it. And I think we sold 10 tapes, something like that. It was like 10 cents per copy, so we sent them a money order for like 40 cents, you know. There are your royalties. But it doesn't work like that anymore. You have to purchase, there's a cap on it, a minimum amount that you have to pay per quarter for using for covering a song. Another comment over there?
I was wondering, it's a little bit of a tangent, but exactly what are the copyright laws as they apply to sampling in that case?
You know, that I was wondering myself too, because I've been playing around quite a bit with I need to look into this, I really do, because I've gotten into recently taking loops, and I've been using a lot of the included loops that come with Cakewalk Sonar, Fruity Loops, Acid. But the problem is, these are the same sounds that everybody else is using. You know, so it's no wonder that everybody's music is starting to sound the same. It's because they're all using these same loops. And I've, you know, sometimes I'll listen to a song and I'm like, oh man, I'd love to sample just one measure of that drum drum track, and I really, really do need to check into what the legality of that is, because I've heard different conflicting stories. I've heard some people say you can use up to, you know, 5 seconds of a song because they deem that anything anything that small is going to be unrecognizable. But there have been groups that have gone in and challenged groups in court that haven't actually acquired the rights. There is I think it's called the Sample Clearinghouse. Sampling Clearinghouse, something like that, is a an outfit that will actually handle the licensing for sampling when need be for you. So basically you tell them which song you wish to sample, the length of the sample or the amount of sample you're going to use, and it's kind of a one-stop shop where they print up the contracts for you, collect the royalties for the artist and distribute them, and of course take a small retainer fee for their services as well. That's a good point, and it's getting more into the sampling and looping. It's something that I need to check out because I don't want to go to jail. Any other questions or comments? How are we on time, by the way? 5 minutes or so? Okay.
I was just wondering, do you personally have a visual presence on the MP3?
Basically just their generic web page.
Is it really necessary to, as a promotional device?
Oh, no. I mean, I think I changed the background color scheme of my page. It defaults to white. I think I changed it to black, and I changed some font colors, so that it's white on black as opposed to black on white, just to give it a little bit, different look. But I've seen people that, maybe have uploaded some album cover art, and that's about it. They haven't gone hog wild on customizing their site, and some of these people are making thousands of dollars. The key is getting on the charts. Once you break through on those charts, the sky's the limit there, because you're going to, you're going to get a certain number of people that are going to like your stuff, and they're going to keep coming back to your site. And as long as you, keep keep your site fresh and keep new music going out there, it can be a perpetual cycle where you're constantly making money, and you're going to get better royalties than any record label is going to ever pay you. Now that's the thing. So many artists have been taken to the cleaners and gone into bankruptcy because they get a cash advance from a record label when they sign a major recording deal. We're going to sign you to a 3-album deal, and we're going to give you a cash advance of $200,000. Go out and make an album. Well, the artists think, oh wow, they've just paid us $200,000. No. Wrong. That is a loan. That is a loan that is payable back with interest. Okay? That's it. That is a loan against future royalties that they're giving you. In other words, they're saying, we're paying you $200,000 here. If you earn $200,000 worth of royalties from your record sales, great. The slate is wiped clean. If you don't, you do your 3-album deal with them, and your albums completely bomb, don't sell, guess what? When your contract is up, you owe the record label the balance of the royalties that they did not make from you. And there have been quite a few bands that have had to file bankruptcy because they can't afford, they went out, they got this money and weren't thinking. They didn't have a good lawyer, legal advice. They went out and spent this money, bought some new cars, put a down payment on a house, and suddenly, the record doesn't sell, and they're finding themselves, broke, completely broke. So, with MP3.com, that situation, really never can happen, because they're not giving you a cash advance, but they're giving you a chance to make a break, and you're on this website with all these other artists there. So there's traffic going to this website, and once you can get your site promoted, your page promoted, and you can get some people on there downloading your music, it's really really amazing how well this system can work for some artists. Like I said, I've only been at it for about a month and a half, so a year from now, hopefully I'll come back here and, have that house in the Florida Keys. No, I'm just kidding about that. I don't think I'm ever going to make that much money. But we can dream. Comment over here. Hold on a second. Here comes the microphone.
I'm talking about these file services like Audio Galaxy. How do you foresee the future as you as an artist is going to protect your property rights?
Well, first off, I am always of the mindset that there's always going to be X number of people that are going to pirate your music. They're not going to purchase your music. You know, the record company, record labels are going, oh, my God, people are downloading and swapping our music for free? You know, this has been going on for ever since, tape recorders became available. You know, first it was on reel-to-reel tape recorders, then cassette recorders came along. I mean, people have been copying tapes for people for generations. It's just the recording industry just thinks digital is a four-letter word. I mean, they're scared to death of it. The idea of being of your 1 millionth generation copy sounding exactly the same as your first generation copy just doesn't sit well with them. But I realize that there's going to be a certain percentage of people that are going to do that are not going to buy your music. And for me, it's not a financial thing. You know, I'm not trying to do this as a profession. It's just for shits and giggles for me right now. So, you know, the more people that want to have my music, fine. You want to, pay me something? Go to listen to it off of mp3.com, throw a couple pennies my way, and great. But if not, burn it onto a CD, pass it around to your friends, don't sell it. don't start bootlegging and competing with me on that level. Once you start selling somebody's work without compensating it, then you're getting into a bad area, I think. But as far as distributing it, no, it's all about getting your music out there and letting other people hear it. Because I firmly believe when that happens, you're going to create new fans that are going to purchase your music. The whole idea is getting the exposure, and the more people that are hearing your music, the more people are going to buy your music. And the record companies just have a really tough time seeing this. They want to be compensated for each and every copy that's in existence, and that's never going to happen. Software industry is a perfect example. They seem about 10 years ago. I mean, I remember back in the 1980s. Software had all sorts of goofy copy protection on it. I mean, they'd put discs, they'd have errors on it, whereas if you tried to copy the disc, you'd copy the errors and you couldn't make a clean copy of it. And the crackers just laughed at this. I mean, a new piece of software would hit the streets and 3 days later they'd be uploading it onto BBSs, And the software industry, I think, it seems like about 10 years ago, they finally took a deep breath and said, okay, we're putting all this time and energy and money towards trying to come up with these copy protection schemes to secure our work, and these hackers are going in and they're circumventing it and laughing at us, and they're uploading it anyway. We're spending money here on this; it's not working. Even software that requires a dongle, a physical dongle that you have to plug in into the back of your computer, which is a pain in the butt. People go in, they decompile the code. They find out where the code is that's looking for that dongle, and they just basically route around it. So, I've seen software that requires a dongle that will run without the dongle. The software industry, I think, it seems like about 10 years ago, they finally realized, okay, there is going to be X percentage of the public that's not going to buy our software, no matter what, okay? Let's just write it off as a loss, get over it, and concentrate on what we're doing in terms of marketing it. And it really surprises me that a large industry like the music industry doesn't have the same mindset. I mean, we're talking about corporate suits here. I corporate suit is a corporate suit as far as I'm concerned when you get up to that level. But it's just a completely different mindset in the recording industry. They want to control every copy that's out there, and it's not going to happen. These secure systems, these secure file systems that they're going to come out with, oh, I can't wait. Well, I don't possess enough programming ability to crack anything that they come up with. Somebody will. And even if they don't, you know, if you have a decent sound card, you can sample through your sound card and... you know, you'll add maybe a little. You're going from digital to analog back to digital. Okay, you're going to add a little bit of noise, but if you have a decent sound card, that level of noise that you add to the sound card is going to be so negligible that, again, you know, nobody's going to even notice. Versus, you know, again, we're getting back to the encoding bitrate thing, 128K versus 160K. How many people can really tell the difference? You know. So, anything else? Are we ready to wrap it up? Pardon me? Okay. Okay, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. Wow, I can ramble good, can't I? I can sit up here and actually talk about something at ends for completely unprepared. Well, great. I hope everybody enjoyed the discussion. I don't think anybody learned anything. Well, maybe you did. Maybe some of you are musicians and didn't know about the deal that MP3.com has going, but go ahead and check them out and make $1 million, you know, or at least a couple thousand. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.